and it elected hundreds of its members to public office. It was vastly bigger than the first clan, claiming, in what was almost certainly an exaggeration, 4 million to 6 million members. It owned or controlled about 150 magazines or newspapers, two colleges, and the Cavalier Motion Picture Company, dedicated to countering Hollywood's immoral influence. Most important, the 1920s Klan's program was embraced by millions who were not members, possibly even a majority of Americans. Far from appearing disreputable or extreme in its ideology, the 1920s Klan seemed ordinary and respectable to its contemporaries. At many of its events, elected officials spoke. Its members included both the well and the poorly educated, professionals, business people, farmers, and wage workers. But lower middle class and skilled working class people formed its core constituency. In addition to providing fraternalism and sisterhood, it conferred prestige on its members and delivered business networking opportunities. For these reasons, many joined in the hopes of raising their social and economic status or identity. Thus, membership in the Klan could appear to offer a route into the middle class. Although it claimed to represent the soul of America, its prestige rose from its exclusiveness. During its relatively brief period of strength, its members were proud to belong. The Klan built a politics of resentment, reflecting but also fomenting antipathy toward those who it defined as threatening Americanism. To understand its strength, we need to notice which groups it identified as enemies. By blaming immigrants and non-Protestants for stealing jobs and government from true Americans, it stayed away from criticism of those who wielded economic power. Devoted to a business ethic, revering the pursuit of profit as confirmation of individual independence and manliness, the Klan respected men of great wealth and considered their social position earned and deserved. Instead, it blamed elites, typically presented as big city liberal professionals, secular urbanites who promoted cosmopolitanism and were thus insufficiently patriotic, and looked down on Klanspeople as stupid and/or irrational and/or out of step with modernity. This disrespect for the Klan only intensified its hostility and sense of righteousness. Simultaneously, the Klan denounced corruption, which it considered a uniquely big city and non-Protestant phenomenon, and complained especially that big city governments and police were venal and lazy. These Klan targets were always racialized. Its anti-elitism focused on Jews, all of whom appeared in Klan talk either as snobbish, overeducated, effete professionals or money-grubbing merchants out to fleece innocent consumers. Thus, large populations of urban poor and working-class Jews did not exist in Klan social analysis. Political corruption it blamed on Catholics, the Irish and Italians especially, and here too the Klan did not acknowledge the masses of non-Protestant working-class people who were as much fleeced by corruption as were Klan members. In the last few decades, that understanding of elites, albeit with less anti-Semitism or anti-Catholicism, has once again become common in political rhetoric. Today's anti-elitism provides insight into the popularity of the Klan and illustrates particularly the difficulty of placing it on a conventional left-right spectrum. True, Klanspeople typically preached distinctly right-wing principles, such as anti-communism, though concern about political radicals played only a minor part in its diatribes. Of course, bigotry has long been characteristic of the right. But Klan anger was also directed at what it considered immorality. This resentment did not always coincide with actual economic insecurity. Some Klansmen felt their economic position slipping, but others were upwardly mobile. Racial and religious bigotry may have been provoked by economic anxiety, but also arose from independent, long-standing American traditions. Goading members into racial and religious anger might not have worked without pre-existing prejudices. Also, challenging a neat left-right distinction is the fact that most traditional conservatives denounced the Klan out of fear that mass social movements could lead to dangerous mob rule. Many ministers in mainstream...